From GEICO Subconscious News, I'm Tammy Racing Thoughts, broadcasting from your brain. You think you live in a pretty safe place, but you just heard about a break-in 4 miles away, which isn't close, but it isn't far either, you know? Art Palpitations is on the scene.
I sure am, Tammy, and I don't even know why I drove out here, because as you know, you got customized renter's insurance through GEICO, so your stuff is covered.
Oh, well, that's great. Any sign of crime there, Art?
Just some light littering, Tammy, but like they say, a little litter can lead to a lot.
Wise words. It feels good to worry less. It feels good to GEICO.
Moncrief on News Talk.
A new survey from the credit union has found that people's outlook on economic issues such as prices or personal finance is consistently negative. It's even got a name, permagloom. Is this a built-in attitude or is it a perfectly reasonable reaction to the times that are in it? Brendan Kelly is Professor of Psychiatry at Trinity College. Good afternoon, Brendan.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Is it built into us to be pessimistic?
It is built into us to be pessimistic. Our brains are built to detect threats. We are attracted to negative information. We remember it more clearly, and it feels more urgent than positive information. You know, a lot of things are improving in the world, but we focus on the things that feel like they're not improving. Thus, this sense of perma crisis, which of course hasn't been helped by an awful lot of rain this year so far.
And maybe a lot of crisis too, probably. Doesn't help that much either. Why is that wired into us then? Is this a survival mechanism?
Yeah, it's partly a survival mechanism in the sense that it's more important to be aware of an acute threat than it is to be aware of slow, steady progress. I mean, the fact is there are, for example, fewer people in extreme poverty in the world than ever before, and that level of the poverty improves, decreases every day. But that doesn't make a newspaper headline even faintly as interesting as some kind of minor crisis, which can be hyped up and to which we respond emotionally rather than logically.
Yeah, okay. So we're on the lookout for bad things.
We're sensitized to pick up on the bad things, but that no longer serves the evolutionary purpose that it used to serve because we live in a very different world. I mean, our days are not defined by running from tigers and lions and things like this. I mean, our emotional day is defined by very small things. So, for example, I know that education levels have risen. We now live longer than we ever have before. We live in a socially, generally progressive society, but my day is dominated by a printer that's not working right. So, you know, these micro traumas, people tend to call them, but they're really just annoyances. They assume an amplified importance because we are ultimately, Sean, deeply, deeply irrational creatures.
Yeah. So, I mean, and this particular survey was about economic factors. And so you get, you know, and you could probably stop anyone in the street and they go, well, you know, cost of living and, tariffs and international turmoil and all that kind of stuff. So it would be reasonable, perhaps, for somebody just in the economic sense to be a bit at least cautious, if not gloomy, about the outlook of things.
Yes, I mean, that makes emotional sense, also some degree of logical sense. So we things are more expensive. The weekly shop costs more. But your example of tariffs is a really interesting one because it is the concept of tariffs and the idea of tariffs that is really causing havoc across financial markets and in people's minds. The realities of tariffs are, for many people, not as bad as the rhetoric and the negative implications of the rhetoric. Mm. Now, I know there are industries out there that are facing big challenges because of tariffs, but broadly speaking, they haven't been the sweeping, apocalyptic, devastating force that some of the political rhetoric would have led us to believe.
Yeah, right. So compare that to the Celtic Tiger. What was going on there? Suddenly, you know, everything was great. We were all going to be millionaires by Christmas.
Listen, we move rapidly in different directions based on not a whole lot. I mean, not everybody partied during those Celtic Tiger years.
No, indeed not.
They were good times for some people, not for others. And some of the consequences of that, if you like, that sort of excessive exuberance followed by despondency, we're now seeing. So, for example, we're seeing obviously a generation of people who are really struggling to own a home or indeed to rent a place to live. And that is one of the very specific problems we face. On the other hand, there are many, many positive indicators in Ireland and the world. So, for example, we are seeing, for example, a reduction in the rates of deliberate self-harm here in Ireland. Not as much of a reduction as we would like, but a substantial decrease. We're seeing a very significant decrease in the rate of suicide here in Ireland. Every suicide is, of course, one too many. And, you know, statistics are often inadequate to describe what people go through. But it has reduced by around a third since the year 2000. So, I mean, while there is so much more work to be done in that and other areas, it is incorrect to say that everything is simply getting worse when things, in fact, aren't. And another really good example, Sean, is loneliness, which is much spoken of at the moment. And yet the Central Statistics Office figures tell us that among young people, 5% feel lonely all the time or frequently. Now, I do feel for that 5%. However, it is one of the lower rates of reported loneliness. But we do tend to focus on the negative statistics wherever we can come up with them, rather than standing back and saying we need to do vastly more about issues like self-harm and suicide. But positive change is possible.
Yeah, and a lot of people are texting in wondering, is this to a degree culturally influenced? That you know, there tends to be a negativity in Irish culture anyway. We're much better at sad songs than happy ones.
Yes, we are. So there is a cultural influence here, Sean, but the most obvious cultural influence is the idea of Irish exceptionalism. We regard ourselves as the sort of the most negative or pessimistic in the world. Most countries regard themselves as the most negative and pessimistic. We tell ourselves we talk about the weather far more than other countries do. In pretty much every country in the world, they tell themselves they talk about the weather more than other countries do. So we do tend to think we're unique. We're either the best or the worst or the oddest in certain ways. We're not as different as we think. But in response to your listener, yes, there definitely are cultural factors, and these don't always help us. So, for example, in Ireland, we have a very strong culture of home ownership, owning your own home, and it is very, very important socially and culturally, whereas other countries place greater emphasis on sort of security of long-term rental and so forth. And so perhaps sometimes our cultural expectations don't serve us very well.
Yeah. Good luck finding a place to rent even. If, say, as an experiment, we all threw away our phones for a couple of weeks and, God forbid, didn't listen to the radio or watch TV, would we feel better, do you think?
Well, we would feel a short-lived sense of virtue by renouncing the technology. And I wouldn't knock that on the head at all. I love a short sense of virtue myself. It's what I hope for. But we would replace it immediately with something else. Look, Sean, we blame our phones for everything as if they were independent of our use of them. I mean, particularly for young people. And we know that we all need to put down our phones a bit more. Adults, teenagers, children, we all need to put down the phones. But none of us would want to go back to an era where we did not have the advantages of our phones and technology in general and what it lets us do. And, you know, before we pathologize an entire generation of young people on the basis of their phones, it's important to look at the totality of young people's lives today. Yes, they use their phones a lot, but they also participate in weekly sport more than any generation ever has. That has shot up in the past 20 years at the same time that phones and social media have entered their lives. So if we step back and stop being so obsessed with phones and look at the totality of young people's lives, we find a complex picture that is not all negative.
Yeah, no, indeed not. But would it be fair to say that rates of anxiety have increased greatly?
Well, rates of people reporting feeling anxious have gone up, it would seem. Now, surveys are very unclear about that, but this is probably not disabling anxiety disorders. This is more of an awareness of anxiety. And, you know, people talk about an anxious generation. I think it is more accurate to describe our young people as the aware generation. They are aware of all kinds of things that perhaps I, as a middle-aged man, was not aware. Things about injustice, tremendous things about the planet and very important things that certainly my generation did not pay enough attention to. This does lead to some anxiety, but not to the level of anxiety disorders or conditions that benefit from diagnosis.
Right. Okay. So, but we often, is there, maybe we conflate kind of, we pathologize things perhaps a bit too much.
Yeah, I mean, the language of psychology, psychiatry and diagnosis has moved into everyday life. Mm. And annoyances are described as traumas. Nervousness is an anxiety condition and so forth. This really is medicalizing the ups and downs of day to day life. And it honestly doesn't help anyone. It doesn't empower people to find solutions. And it can even, if you like, perpetuate how people see themselves. So, yeah, the language of therapy is seeping through the world like some kind of unstoppable mist. And this is helpful if it improves understanding, but many people experience it as disempowering rather than helping them move forward.
Brendan, thanks very much for speaking with us today. That was Brendan Kelly, the Professor of Psychiatry at Trinity College Dublin.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.